Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello and welcome to Musicals with Cheese. In this very special bonus episode, I am joined by composer, lyricist, and many other things, Adam Wachter, who you might know from his musical Terrytown, the forthcoming encore on Disney Plus, or his most important appearance, a past guest on Musicals with Cheese.
Very important. You. It's the highlight of my resume, Musicals with Cheese.
Is it in your book, like, you just have it in there, like, oh, this is something I was involved in?
I tell everyone I meet. So I shake their hand and I say, my name's Adam. I was once a guest on Musicals with Cheese. We talked about Merrily We Roll Along. Oh, I forgot to pick a cheese for Hello, Dolly. I have to do that. Oh,
don't, no spoilers, dude.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know which order. Is this coming out before? Do people listen to this before the episode?
I don't know. This will be all over the place. So you'll see where. No, it's all staying in. Thank you for joining on with us, Adam. And really, yes. I just want you to give an introduction to yourself. Give an artist statement to those listening.
Oh,
who
Jesus.
You are, what you stand for, and all that.
Well, I don't know.
You got this. I believe in you.
Oh, my God. I'm Adam Wachter, and... I'm sort of a jack of all trades, I guess, and I just do lots of things with musical theater, and I always have, and I just love it. And I stand for Motherhood America and the Heart Lunch for Orphans. I have to sing Hello Dolly songs. That's what we're going
to
talk about later.
He has to.
Well, if you say, what do you stand for? Of course I'm going to sing a Hello Dolly song.
I mean, that literally starts with I knock them down.
That's right. That's how this works. I am a music director, you know, primarily I've done that mostly, and I write musicals and I've written films and film scores also. And now at the moment I'm on the musical theater faculty at Point Park University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And that's, what I'm up to. And I'm on a TV show called Encore on Disney Plus, November 12th.
So
that's it, really. What else do you want to know?
What career do you prefer to be involved in? Do you prefer being a teacher, or do you prefer being a huge TV star?
Well, I would prefer being a huge TV star were I actually one of those, which I'm not. Do you know what, really? I really like that I get to do a little bit of all of it. I think if I were just really doing one thing, I think I would be bored. You know what I mean? Like, I like teaching, but if I were just teaching, I would get sick of it. And if I were just music directing over and over, I would get sick of that. If I were just writing musicals, like, you know, I would need to emerge from my computer one day. So I would get sick of that, too. I like that I do it all. And I think partly that can be a hindrance in a career. There are people who are really successful because they do one thing and they do it so well. But, you know, we got to live our lives. And I enjoy my life sort of doing a little of everything.
Mm-hmm. So you're from the millennial generation, right? Just like trying to get as much information.
Barely from the millennial generation. I'm a little too old, I think, to officially be considered a millennial, but close.
You're close.
What's the cutoff for a millennial?
1979 is the start of millennials.
Is it really? What happened to
yes.
Generation X?
They're 70s and above, but if you're born in late 1979, early 1980, and that goes up until 1996, and that's millennial.
Oh, then I guess, yeah, I am a millennial. All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought there were all these generations. What happened to Generation Y? Who are they?
I
what happened
don't know.
To Generation
just...
Next, like the Spice Girls sang about in the Pepsi commercials?
Which one was the best generation that Michael Jackson always talked about?
the Beat Generation, I think. No, that's a joke. That was sort of a joke on too many levels to actually be funny, because it was sort of about beat poets, which makes no sense, but also he had a song called Beat It, and it was operating on too many levels, and no one will laugh.
Well, I'm laughing now that you explained it. It's hilarious.
The best jokes are the ones you have to explain. That's how the adage goes, I think.
Yes, yes. I 100% agree. But now I've got a question about your relationship with musical theater. Basically, how do you describe your relationship with musical theater? What are your favorite musicals of all time? And really, what made you drive to be like, that's what I'm going to do?
Oh, God. My relationship with musical theater is very much, I'm the bottom, for sure.
But are you a power bottom?
I thought that would get more of a laugh. Oh, you were continuing the joke and I fucked it up. Start over. Cut that out. Cut that out of the episode. No, I am not. Only for musical theater. I don't know anything else but musicals. I started at a very early age. My parents would take me to see local shows. I grew up in a small town in Western Michigan called Holland. And we have a tulip festival every year, and that's about it. A lot of Christians. So, yeah, they would take me to musicals, and I got cast recordings on cassette tapes. My grandparents lived in Cleveland, so we would do a lot of long drives to and from Cleveland, and we would listen to cassette tapes of musicals, all the big ones from the 80s, The Phantoms and Cats, Les Mis, all that kind of stuff. Guys and Dolls, my dad loved Guys and Dolls. And then, you know, they taped things off PBS for me, Into the Woods, all the sort of shows. And I don't know what it, there's something, you know, it's just that gay gene that just is drawn to musical theater. And I very much had it. And then I started doing shows, like acting in them as a kid locally and in high school and middle school and things, and going to theater camp in the summer and, you know, all the shit you do, really. And then I went to the University of Michigan and was actually a theater arts major there, but worked on the musicals a lot and played piano for them and did some arranging and things there. I was doing summer theater at the same time. Then I moved to New York and worked for a bit in a talent agency and then a producer's office, and then got fired and had to pay my rent, and I could play the piano. And I went to a friend who is a casting director for Broadway and said, I need to make some money. Can I play auditions? And I started playing auditions, and everything kind of snowballed from there. I started getting work as a music director, kind of learned everything on the job, started writing, went to grad school. Here I am. I don't know. It's a weird sort of trajectory. I don't think it's super typical, but I don't know that there is a really typical trajectory in this business, especially sort of on the creative side of it. I think everyone's path is really different, but that's really is sort of all I've ever done, which is sort of sad because I do like other things, but the only thing that's ever made me money has been musical theater.
You can like other things that aren't musical theater? Like, what do you like?
Well, there's other things in the world. I like traveling. I really love home improvement. I'm really good with like power tools, and I've renovated.
Oh, I thought you meant
house.
The Tim Allen TV show. I was like, you're just really a, that's like a life
that's
thing.
That's all I'm into. The Tim Allen TV show. No, actual home improvement, home renovations. I've renovated an apartment in New York. I've done a house now in Pittsburgh. I don't know. I watch TV and I just hang out and do things. But yeah, it's a lot of musicals now that you mention it.
All right. So that what were your favorites growing up? And like, we all have a childhood favorite and an adult favorite. Mm-hmm. Was there a change in that, or are they still the same thing?
Well, there's been a change because obviously new musicals have been written since I was a child. One of my all-time favorites is Carolina Change, and that didn't exist mm-hmm. until 2003, I think it was. 2004 on Broadway. 2004 Tony Awards. As a child, I loved Andrew Lloyd Webber and Boublil and Schoenberg, you know, all mm-hmm. Les Mis and Miss Saigon and Joseph and all the big ones.
Babies first musicals, I didn't really know.
Yeah, the stuff that we all, you know, think we love, and we do still to an extent. Secret Garden, I was very into Secret Garden, and then did it like in summer stock as a kid. And then, you know, in high school, sort of started exploring my love for Sondheim. Already knew Into the Woods, but really got into the rest of the Sondheim catalog. And then Rent came out, and it was all, you know, it was all downhill from there. Not really. I was a Rent head. I was a crazy Rent head in high school, like a lot of gays were at that time. And that was sort of what I ate, breathed, and drank. I don't know what the third thing is. Rent. And then more stuff as it came out. And then there was sort of a transition, I guess, like in my 20s, when I stopped being a fan at some point. Mm-hmm. And really became a professional about it. And now I can look at musicals very objectively and from a sort of scholarly, I guess, point of view, which doesn't diminish my love for them. Oh, and Hello, Dolly, which we'll talk about. But Hello, Dolly, I was obsessed with as a middle schooler. And I saw Carol Channing in the national tour of that in 1994, I believe, when it came to Grand Rapids, Michigan. And that was a huge point in my life as well. And I still love that show.
All right. And now this question is more like a theater nerd question, which I wouldn't usually ask if you were just like a composer to me, but I know you're a nerd. So I'm like, so yeah. The question is, what do you think is the most underrated musical theater song? It doesn't even have to be from a particularly great piece, but just a song that you think should get more attention.
Oh my God, I don't know. Yeah, I needed a little warning for that question because I'd have to go through them all and like figure it out. Underrated. Well, I feel like Sondheim is off the table because there's nothing underrated about Sondheim. Like, you know, he's certainly celebrated. I think a lot of the classics are really appreciated and celebrated. So it sort of takes off like Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hammerstein and Frank Lesser and all those things. Oh my God. Underrated song. I don't know. There's a lot. Underrated.
What was the first one that came to your head when you heard the question?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Nothing has come to my head. I'm being completely honest.
Oh, wow.
I'm not. There's so many songs. If you had said Score or something, maybe
okay,
I would
we'll stick
sort
with
of
score
have a
there.
Fighting chance. Oh, damn it. I know that. I guess okay. Well, I don't know about most underrated, but I think there's a lot of underrated scores out there. I think a lot of Michael John LaChiusa stuff is underrated because I think his work is so dense that it just demands multiple listens. And unless you give it that, then you can't even begin to appreciate it. So I think if you're looking at sort of Bernarda Alba or First Lady Suite or
yes,
see what I want to see any of his.
Actually, my answer was going to be from First Lady Suite, so that's funny.
Oh, really? What's your underrated song?
The entire Laura Bush and Barbara Bush scene,
sure.
No Tears. I just sob. Yeah. Like, anytime that comes up on my phone, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm giving a fuck about the Bushes. No!
No, totally. I mean, he's really a master, I think. The Queen of the Mist. I saw Queen of the Mist in New York. I think I saw the Invited Dress, actually, and was so blown away. And then I got to see it again recently in London with a very different sort of much younger cast and but it still really held up and was just stunning. And there's just moments in that musically that are gorgeous. You know who else is, I think, weirdly underrated is Scott Frankel and his stuff with Michael Corey. I think the War Paint score I'm a little biased because I played keyboards for it in New York, and so I got to know it very intimately. But that, to me, is just like a staggering accomplishment of musical theater writing. Grey Gardens, well, Grey Gardens isn't underrated because I think everyone sort of knows how good that is. But sort of Far From Heaven and things, lesser things of theirs that aren't lesser in their composition or in their craft, but are lesser known. He's a genius. They're geniuses. He's literally a genius. Have you ever read Far From the Tree by any chance?
I have not.
Far From the Tree is this great book about children who are born different from their parents. And every chapter is like a very different sort of take on that, you know, kids who are born gay to straight parents, or kids who grow up to be psychopathic criminals to perfectly normal parents. It really runs the gamut. And but in the chapter on kids who are born geniuses, Scott Frankel is one of the examples.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, insane. He's like an actual genius. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, I don't know what we're talking about anymore. Oh, underrated.
Speaking
song.
Of musical
I'm keep
genius.
Thinking.
That's fine. Uh-oh. We can move. You gave a perfectly good answer. I think that was
you
explained it very well.
Strive to be perfectly good.
You are perfectly good. So I'm very curious. Like I started off this weird relationship you and I have as just a fan of your work as a musical theater composer. I think you're
which I have
incredible.
To ask you, how did you even discover that? Like, how do you even know that I am one? Like, no one knows that. You know what I mean? I feel like, no, like, it's, I've got very little work out there, and I don't sort of publicize it. So how did you even find it? I'm so curious.
Well, what I do, and something I do very often, is I just go to the musical theater section of Apple Music or SoundCloud or whatever, and I just throw it on shuffle, and if there's something I like, I click on the album and start it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And there was something of mine on there?
Yeah, I was on SoundCloud, and then Terrytown popped up, and I think it was like the story of Sleepy Hollow, or the Ichabod Crane story told by Braun, and I'm like, ooh, oh, and I was like, started from the beginning, I'm like, I'm into this, like, this is pretty great.
Like, the demo recording with Jeremy Jordan, that one?
I believe so,
like
it's whatever one is on
like...
SoundCloud currently.
Oh, I don't even know, I'm so bad at all of this, I need to, like, publicize my shit more. The whole whole demo's on SoundCloud.
If that's a demo, like I'm still very impressed by that, and I, it looks like a demo.
Yeah. Well, there isn't like anything else, so it must be. But there's a couple older demos that I wondered if we're still.
Yeah, it's Andy Mantis and Jeremy Jordan and Krista Rodriguez.
Yeah. So that's like the new demo that I did last summer to sort of try to sell it, but then nobody bought it. So there you go. If anyone's listening to this and wants to produce a really great, small, three-person musical, I've got one available for you.
Honestly, I have sincerely thought about, like, man, I just kind of want to take, like, a song or two and just film it because I think it's great.
Do it. Please.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it's finding people that can live up to the voices of Jeremy Jordan and Christina Rodriguez and Andy Mantis.
Just have people lip sync.
No. But back to the question that started before we took this tangent off to the world of Terrytown. Who would you describe as your biggest inspirations in your musical theater composition and lyric work?
Well, lyrically, Sondheim, of course, you know, the master. I love internal rhymes. I love unexpected rhymes. I love always having perfect rhymes. That's the way to do it. You know, why, if you're going to emulate someone, you know, go for the best. And he really is the best in terms of, you know, that sort of talky and psychological sort of, it's very contemporary what he does, even though he's been doing it for so long. It really, that's so lyrically, like, obviously that's the big one. Musically, I don't know. I guess it's just everybody that I've ever listened to filtered through me. And it's a little of everything. There's certainly some Sondheim stuff in there. There's also, I think, some really like melodic, you know, Jerry Hermony stuff somewhere in there. Maury Yeston springs to mind, and some of like the piano figures and things. I don't know if there's one like inspiration. I think it's just a lifetime of listening to musicals boiled down and filtered through my own sort of taste and style, and that's what you get. It's not, you know, I don't write sort of poppy stuff, I don't think. I don't do a lot of like stuff that sounds like stuff on the radio. It's all very much in a musical theater world because that's what I listen to and what I've studied. So that's not to say I don't think
like
I could
do
write
a bunch
song.
Of belty stuff either, like, which I kind of like because I'm kind of belted out
yeah.
from like
belted out.
Ever since Let It Go came out, I've been like belted out. So I'm like, just give me some like nice, pretty tunes, please.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. It's all about sort of what the moment in the musical demands. And that's the big difference in writing musicals versus some of these contemporary musical theater writers, as they call themselves, who write songs. I think when you write a musical and you're writing for character and for plot, you come off with a very different sort of product because it's not just about, I'm going to write this song and a girl's going to belt as high as she possibly can at the end of it. And so I know everyone's going to sing it in their cabarets and for their auditions. But then, you know, sometimes you hear those songs and you fall in love with them and then you go see the musicals they're from and you're like, wait a minute, this is garbage. What's happening? This has nothing to do with anything. So I think the best musical theater songs are derived from character and plot and usually sort of inextricable from those things. I don't when I go into writing a song, I don't usually think like, okay, I'm going to write this style of song. I usually am at a point in a plot in a musical I'm working on, and I'm thinking, what do I need here in this plot? What comes next in this musical? And I write that.
I think that's great. And the reason why I asked this is because I couldn't place my finger on like inspirations for you either.
Oh, good.
Which is like one of those. There's some composers out there, and I'm not going to name names, but
you can definitely tell. Come on. No, I'm kidding.
Well, the ones I'm thinking of specifically are other U of M grads that I've forgot the name of. the Dear Evan Hansen guys and the Greatest Showman guys.
Yeah.
Pasek and Paul.
Yeah.
I can hear their influences very heavily.
Really? See, I feel like they have a really, you can see that they were influenced certainly by like pop and stuff. I feel like they have created a really unique sound that does sound like contemporary musical theater, but certainly when I hear like a Pasek and Paul song, I know it. And I think that's one of the hardest things to find in writing is like your unique voice. So even though maybe it's not always unique, certainly certain songs of theirs you can tell were inspired by maybe something on the radio now and then.
Right.
They've found a niche for themselves, and Lord knows they've been successful at it. So good for them. And
but
they write the
musicals.
Like, Evan Hansen is brilliant. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. But then you also have folks like Brian Yorkey and Tom Kitt, where I don't know where to put them anymore. They've not been consistent enough for me to figure out what their style is.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I sometimes forget about them, but I think they are so good. I mean, I think Tom Kitt is one of the all-time great musicians of our generation, and I think he does so much work sometimes behind the scenes, as opposed to just writing and writing and writing, that we sort of can lose sight of how good he is. But his stuff really, I think, all stems from a pop mentality and from listening to stuff on the radio, you know, especially obviously like High Fidelity and Next to Normal and things that are really pop based. You just hear how influenced he is by playing in bands and that kind of thing.
I know someone else who I'd put in that very similar category and a friend of the show that I think is very underrated is Paul Gordon.
Oh yeah, he writes beautiful little melodies too, and they're very poppy, but also very musical theater, and sometimes very operatic in a way too. Yeah, gorgeous stuff.
Gosh, I think his Jane Eyre musical is absolutely incredible.
Incredible. Like, I saw it. I was in high school, and I went to New York, and my sister and I went to TKTS, and we got a ticket, and we saw Jane Eyre, and it was gorgeous, stunning.
That musical deserves so much more attention and so much more respect. And I love what he's doing for like musical theater now. Like he started its own like musical theater, like recording and streaming platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, he's like filming things and he's experimenting with the form, which I think is super cool.
Good guy. All right. Next talk. We're going back to Terrytown again.
Okay.
All right. So tell me the story about how this show came up. What made you think Legend of Sleepy Hollow, this is where I'm taking that?
A true story. I was up one night watching TV, as I am wont to do, and a made-for-TV movie version of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow came on. It is, you can still find it somewhere. I haven't seen it since, but it stars, oh, damn it, I always forget his name. You know, the original Leo Frank in Parade. What the hell's his name?
Brent Carver.
Yes, Brent Carver. Thank you. Jesus. It stars Brent Carver as Ichabod Crane. And it's straightforward adaptation of Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It's, you know, it's not set in the current day or anything. It's very straightforward, sort of by the book. But he's like a little sort of fae in it, I would say. Like, just mm-hmm. like a little touch of the gay somewhere in there. And just watching it, I already sort of knew the story because we all sort of grew up with it, I guess, like that Disney cartoon version and things. But I was watching it and I was just like, huh, here's this like probably gay outsider music teacher coming to this town. This would be a good musical. And I had sort of entertained the idea of writing one, but I hadn't done one yet. It was the first musical I ever wrote, start to finish, you know, completely. I'd written little songs for cabarets and web series and things, but I hadn't written a musical. And I mean, this was we're talking like 10 years ago at this point or more. And it was that like, oh, okay, wait, gay Sleepy Hollow, present day, this will make sense. This story was maybe always about that. It's about this outsider guy and this community that doesn't welcome him because he's different than they are. And having come from a very small town myself and being for many years the only out gay person in this town, and the only Jew for a long time as well, I was very familiar with this like outsider mentality, and I thought that's going to make a good musical. And it just sort of snowballed from there, and I stayed sort of true to the structure of Washington Irving's original story, but obviously updated, and then the characters at some point sort of began speaking as themselves, and different things started happening in the plot, and it became kind of its own little thing.
And thank God for that.
Oh, well.
Are there any big plans for it in the future that you would like to see?
No, there are no plans at all. I wish there were some. You know, I don't know. It had a weird... It's had like a... I'm really bad about getting it out there, and it's hard, and... it had a production in San Diego at this great little theater there called Backyard Renaissance, and it was reviewed really well, and it won sort of their local, like their San Diego Tony for Best Musical. And on the strength of that, I did this reading last summer at MCC Theater in New York that Jeremy and Andy and Krista did, and Michael Arden directed that. And MCC passed on the project because it wasn't sort of right for their season, I think. And then I came to Pittsburgh and started teaching and got distracted and did Encore and all these other things. So right now it is languishing on my hard drive, but I should be sending it to more people. I need to be better about doing that. You know, it's hard. I also don't want to like try to keep forcing the issue. Like if it's not, you know, if it's not going to take off, then I sort of feel like I owe it to myself to kind of move on and write something else, which I have started doing a couple other things. And you know, it is what it is, and maybe one day someone will stumble upon it on SoundCloud and give it another shot.
Well, my next question is about the film that you wrote, Sign. Mm-hmm. You and Andrew Keaton Bulger, I'm going to mess
Bulger,
up
that name Bulger, yeah.
Keaton Bulger,
yeah.
Andrew Keaton Bulger.
It's hard, it's a lot of syllables.
And I get the same way with his sister, like, it's the worst. Yeah.
You can just say AKB, we'll know who you're talking about.
You and him worked together on a film called Sign. How did that come about, and what was your experience working on that? Because it seems a little different from everything else you've done.
Yeah, it is super different from anything else I've done. It's a movie, for one, which I don't often do. It's not a musical, although it is very musical. It came about because Andrew and I have been friends for a long time. We went to college together, and we wanted to do something together. We wanted to collaborate. He had actually directed a couple readings of Terrytown, like really early on, just like private little table reads and things. And we were sitting around one day, and I think I can't remember exactly when this was, but I think he was either like about to leave town or about to start rehearsals for Tuck Everlasting or something. and I had a month off, or I don't know. We both had like a few weeks of free time, which is sort of rare. And we wanted to make something. And he is a beautiful photographer and cinematographer and director. And we were like, let's make a short film. Let's do that. He had made a really successful web series called Submissions Only. So he sort of was looking to do more of that kind of behind the camera stuff. And I was looking to just write something different. And we said, let's make a short film. And it was literally just the two of us being like, let's do this now. And we didn't have any money. We never got any money. We did a fundraiser after we shot it just to pay for some post-production costs and to pay for some submission fees to film festivals, because that's not free. But we really shot it for nothing. And we just wrote this little film. And it was this idea of, can we make we really wanted to play with sort of the corollaries between kind of gayness and deafness. And we wanted to use our deaf friends in the theater industry in New York and work with them and show them off and give them, you know, a voice in a way, because we didn't know of any sort of gay deaf productions of any kind, theatrical or film or TV or anything. So I wanted to do that. So I wrote a script, a screenplay, and we shot it. And then I scored it, and that was it. And then it sort of took off, and we went all over the world showing it at festivals and things like that. And now it's distributed here in America somewhere on some kind of gay web channel that I forget the name of, which is terrible. And then also in Europe, it's part of the Boys on Film DVD series there. Yeah, so you can see it. And it's just on Vimeo also. You can just go to Vimeo and watch it. It's on my website, I think.
If you go to signthefilm.com, it'll take you right
there.
There you
go.
You got, like,
signthefilm.com. You can watch it right there for free.
It's a beautiful film. Fantastic job.
Thanks.
Like, both to you and Andrew. I am impressed always, but I don't know why. You continue to impress me. Like, even post, I was like, damn.
I would say you're my biggest fan, but you're literally my only fan, so thank you.
No.
But hopefully
I'm
not
sure.
For long. Hopefully people will discover me if based solely on my appearances on Musicals with Cheese.
Solely on that. Not even the show Encore, which we're going to talk about next.
Oh, hooray, Encore.
I really want to chat with you, because that started as, like, a TV special, like, to begin with. I remember when that premiered, mm-hmm. like, with Kristen Bell, and I was like, oh, I love mm-hmm. Influence. I want to watch this.
And did you?
Oh, yeah, I watched it.
Oh, good. Did you like it?
It was really good. It was a great concept, really well executed.
Terrific.
This was before I even met you.
You've never met me.
You're right.
Not in person.
Fair point.
Yeah.
One day soon.
One day, I'll be there in Michigan. Yeah, Encore started as, well, it wasn't a special originally, it was a pilot. We shot a pilot in California a few years back now. Kristen Bell produced this pilot idea that we were going to try to sell. Not we, I'm not a producer on it, I'm a music director on it, but they were going to sell to ABC as a series. And ABC didn't pick it up as a series. Instead, they aired it as a special, as sort of a one-off special, and then sold it off to Disney Plus, or however that works. I don't know. They're all owned by the same person, so who knows? But yeah, now it is reborn on Disney Plus, starting November 12th. I think one episode a week is the plan, and there will be 12 new episodes, 12 musicals, remounted high school productions starring their original high school casts who are now adult non-professional performers. That's basically the gist of it.
It's a great premise, and it's really, really entertaining to watch and heartwarming in ways you wouldn't expect. Like, even the trailer, I'm like, oh, I can see myself crying into a glass of wine while watching this in a few weeks.
You will be. It is. I think it's a great mix of, like, very heartwarming, you know, happy feeling reality television a la Extreme Home Makeover or something, like one of those where you do get to really know these people and see their struggles and see them triumph over adversity. And that's very beautiful. And then the other half of it is laugh out loud funny, because you are watching lawyers and bankers and stay at home moms do musicals. And most of them have not done any since high school. And this is years later, sometimes decades and decades later. The oldest one we do is we remount a 1975 production. Was it 75 or 65? 75. 75 production of Anything Goes. And so this cast is now in their 60s. They're in their 60s. And for the most part, have never performed since 1975. And we shove them back on stage and say, okay, you've got 5 days. We are putting this show up again. Good luck. But we, of course, hold their hand, you know, as they go through it. We've got a Broadway creative team who comes to every episode. And we do it. We do the show at the end of a week. And they learn about themselves and they reconnect. And it's honestly just beautiful.
I got a question, just a technical question. How long did you spend personally filming it?
Each episode takes 6 days to film. So I did 6 episodes in this new series, not counting the pilot. So personally, I guess like 36 days, but obviously like on either end of it, there are days of prep. There's a lot of prep that goes into it. We go to these people's schools and we hire a new orchestra in every town we go to. We have to get the shows reorchestrated. You know, there's a lot of prep that goes into it. But actual shooting days, it's 6 days. The first day we meet them and audition them and sort of see where they're at in terms of vocal ability and dance ability and acting ability. And then the next 4.5 days we rehearse. And at the end of the sixth day, we do the show for their friends and family and whoever else wants to come.
So are we expecting that you're going to have a big cameo in The Good Place because now you're best friends with Kristen Bell?
No, we're not. A, The Good Place, I think, is over. Didn't it end? We're in the final season. They've already shot
it. It's about to end.
Yeah.
You can get some Wachter in there. Just squeeze in the Wachter.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? No, I don't think that's going to happen. No, sadly. No, but I would love, I don't know. She's great. And the cool thing for me about Kristen Bell that I didn't really know is just like how good of a musical theater coach she is. Cause I knew that she had musical theater credits. You know, she made her Broadway debut. I think she was 20 years old, maybe in, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer on Broadway. And, obviously I'd seen her like in Reefer Madness and Frozen and stuff like that. So I knew she had the chops, but she, in a couple of the episodes actually comes to the schools and works with these people and really like guides them along. And she's like a really great musical theater coach at the end of the day. And she's so warm and they respond so well to her. And she has such a passion for musicals and for high school musicals in particular, that it's just such a great fit. And it's a great thing to see.
Mm-hmm. So this November, you're going to get a double dose of Kristen Bell with Frozen 2 and with Encore and with Wachter sprinkles.
That's right. Little Wachter sprinkles over 6 episodes of Encore and not at all in Frozen 2.
All right, Adam, this is a great interview. It's been my longest interview just because I genuinely enjoy talking to you.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed talking about myself.
I mean, is there anything else you want to say or anything you want to cover that we haven't talked about yet? Because now is your moment. Spit it out for the world to hear.
No, I can't because I desperately have to pee.
All right, we'll wrap this up. Thank you for joining me, Adam, and we'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
Thank you. Watch Encore.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.